Welcome to the Security Perimeter,
an apocalyptic podcast, starring my dad, Athanasios Christoulas. This is an awesome podcast, the best, guaranteed, 100%. We'll make Perimeter Podcast great again. My name is Lambro Christoulas, your announcer. And now, to my dad, Athanasios Christoulas, a.k.a. Saki.
So, welcome back to the Security Perimeter Podcast. This is the first episode of 2018, and we got an awesome episode for you. Today, we will be discussing with William Dan Libby, a former law enforcement officer in the United States, the issue of internal affairs. You know what? It'll be defined in the podcast, so you don't need to worry if you don't know what internal affairs is, but Dan Libby is a 40-year veteran of law enforcement, and he has spent most of his time working in internal affairs and or in different departments and agencies throughout the United States. And now what Dan does, he goes around the United States and other parts of the world teaching law enforcement departments how to properly set up or how to properly adjust their internal affairs departments in order to make them function properly. And because Mexico really tends to have kind of weak departments of internal affairs, I thought it would be a great idea to speak to Dan about what a good and properly functioning internal affairs department looks like and whether or not that would make a big difference in making Mexico a safer country. So this episode really complements a couple of other podcasts. The ones in particular that I'm thinking about our first episode, 23, which is titled Reforming Law Enforcement in Mexico, Challenges and Challenges and Challenges with Juan Salgado. And earlier one called Law Enforcement in Mexico, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. In fact, I recommend that you listen to all three of them in order to get a good picture of what law enforcement looks like in Mexico today. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and happy 2018 to everyone.
Of course I do.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Dan. I know you're quite a busy man.
No, not really.
Well, how's life?
It's going well. Let's see. I retired in March of 2014, and since then I've been doing a lot of teaching for the University of North Florida in Jacksonville. Right. And for IPTM, it's called the Institute of Police Technology and Management.
Uh-huh.
And I also am doing a lot of expert witnessing. I'm litigation consulting. So I've got a lot of clients that hire me at an exorbitant rate of money to advise them on their lawsuits.
And what have you, I mean, I know you can't tell me specifics, but what kind of cases do you do expert witness on?
Oh, I can tell you specifics. I only have one that's sealed. I have three cases that were wrongful incarcerations where someone was convicted of murder and DNA has set them free. And so they've ended up suing the police departments for the investigation. And you find that there were tremendous mistakes made. In particular, they didn't release exculpatory information to the defense when they should have. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Maryland versus Brady? It's a U.S. Supreme Court case.
No, I'm not.
Way back in 1963, United States Supreme Court said that a prosecutor must hand over all evidence to the defense, including evidence that is exculpatory nature.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's taken almost 40 years for law enforcement to catch on to that.
I thought that was like a given.
Yeah, you would think. Unfortunately, law enforcement said, well, that's a prosecutor's obligation. That's not ours. Although the courts have clearly said since the 80s that no, that's a police obligation also. So there's a lot of lawsuits stemming from the 80s and 90s for investigations, convictions that are now winding their way even now through the court system. And then I have things like arbitration hearings where I defend chiefs that fire somebody for bigoted texts, mm-hmm. or I do pursuits, use of force, all types of things.
Wow, sounds like fun. Do you miss Mexico? Was
it
that
is.
When you were here? Was that when you were here? Was that your first visit to Mexico?
I think I met you on my second visit. I've been there three times.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was the second time. Were you at the was it the polygraphers meeting, or was it the IA background investigations?
It was the internal affairs thing. Yeah.
Right. That was my first trip. You're right. I was okay. there. You saw me for my first trip. Yep.
Well, now
I've been back three times, and that's it.
I'm kind of bringing you back right now, but so the reason, the reason I wanted to talk to you was that when you gave your talk on internal affairs and how internal affairs works and how it should work, it really kind of stuck with me, and it made me think that maybe the biggest problem in law enforcement in Mexico, and your bio, I'm going to put it up on the show notes, but you kind of already introduced yourself, so, and I think you can do a better job of it. You did a better job than I would have, but actually, before let me go ahead and read a little bit of your curriculum here, because something stood out here. So it says here you're a 38-year veteran of law enforcement, recently retired as chief deputy for the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office and the past commander of bureaus of administration and law enforcement, which included the Professional Standards Division, training, internal affairs, and staff inspections. Chief of police for the city of Punta Gorda in Florida. And you're chief of police in Plymouth, New Hampshire. I have family in Concord, New Hampshire. I got a lot of family in Concord, New Hampshire.
I just came back from there.
Did you?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. I was there for a training session at the academy. And I taught a 2-day special issues and internal affairs course to a small group of New Hampshire police officers.
Okay. And then at Bedford, Massachusetts for 11 years? I guess that's where you started your law enforcement career, right?
I actually had 6 months as a part-time officer prior to Bedford, in a little town called Carlisle, Massachusetts, but I generally don't put that on the CV as it wasn't full-time work.
Okay, and then you studied, you have a Bachelor of Arts from U of Mass in American History, and Juris Doctor in law from New England School of Law in Boston.
Yep.
And I can't read everything, Dan, so... one thing that you may have not mentioned before was that you're president of WD Libby Consulting. Well, you did mention that, a law enforcement training corporation, and and you also serve as litigation professional expert witness. So it sounds like fun.
It's keeping me busy.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to what I was saying before. It made me think, this whole talk that you gave on internal affairs made me think that the big problem in Mexico, because the way Mexicans set it up, they set it up as like a multi-generational kind of thing to fix the issue of corruption and generally the mess that this country is going through. And then when you gave that talk on internal affairs, it got me thinking that, well, maybe it isn't so hard. Maybe it's just a question of having properly functioning internal affairs. And then the talk that you gave us and then some other research that I did on my own afterwards, what I came to realize is that internal affairs in Mexico works absolutely nothing the way it works in no way the way it should work. In other words, we're doing everything wrong here. And first of all, I wanted to ask you, do you think internal affairs, a properly functioning internal affairs, would make a big difference? How big a difference, and what would it look like?
Whoa. In Mexico? Or
well, I mean, just generally, because I don't want to get you in trouble.
Okay, well, let me tell you that, you know, internal affairs has its problems both in the United States and in Mexico. I would love to tell you that that professional standards and investigating police officers in the United States is without fault and seamless, but it's not. There is no national standard on investigating police officers in the United States. And although the Department of Justice through Community-Oriented Policing Office has suggested certain guidelines that you follow when you investigate officers, because of the fragmented system of law enforcement that we have in the United States, you have agencies that have basically no accountability and no professional standards to those agencies that hold their people accountable and do a very good job of policing themselves. So I wish I could tell you that it runs really well in the United States, but we have our issues here also. I think the big difference between
could you first tell us, because some people may not know, what is internal affairs?
The internal affairs is the policing of the police. It is investigating officers for administrative misconduct, and it can be for criminal conduct also. But generally, when you talk about internal affairs, you're talking about administrative misconduct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So based on your talk, which was, like I said, I enjoyed thoroughly, how important is internal affairs? Not necessarily how it works in the United States or in the case of Mexico, but how important do you think internal affairs is in order to have a functioning law enforcement team in your country, irrespective of whether or not it's a federal system like Canada and the United States and Mexico or otherwise?
If you don't police your own, then you will lose the trust of the people that you serve. And several things could happen. Number one, they may get so fed up with you that they'll just simply disband the police department and look for their law enforcement services elsewhere. A second thing that may happen is they will take the job of policing the police away from the police and hand it off to an independent group, oftentimes known as like a citizens review committee. Mm-hmm. And third is, if you don't hold your officers accountable and an agency becomes corrupt, it ceases to function properly as a law enforcement agency. It no longer serves the people, but it serves itself. So, you know, is internal affairs important? Yes, you have to hold your people accountable. Failure to do so will result in chaos.
Okay, it's kind of what I suspected the answer would be, but all right. I mean, if you can give us a bit of an outline on how internal affairs should work, not necessarily how it works in the U.S., but how it should work, at least in your mind. Dan, it's not clear in your CV, but or this little bio here, but you did work in internal affairs, right? You were
I actually have headed for the last 11, 20, 18, and 11, for the last 29 years of my 38-year career, I either was involved in internal affairs or headed internal affairs. So they always had internal affairs pretty much always reported to me. Okay, well, internal affairs has basically four components. And the first component would be intake, okay? You have to have a mechanism by which to intake complaints against officers. And that needs to be as inclusive as possible, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to be able to take complaints from whatever source, including anonymous complaints. And the complaint process has to be available to the demographics you serve. So if you were in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which has a very high Asian population or Chinese population. The forms that you use probably should be in Chinese. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you're in Miami, which has a huge Latino population,
right.
their form actually has three languages, English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole. Hmm. So it allows for that process to include all the demographics that are served. Mm-hmm. So you have the intake. And then the second section is you got classification. Not every complaint that is filed with the police department warrants a full internal affairs investigation. But every complaint that is filed needs to be examined and evaluated. Do you understand the differences?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I come into a police department and say, Officer Smith is controlling my actions through radio waves, and he's possessed by aliens, well, you know what? That's a complaint. It's not a valid complaint, and you want to make sure that that person gets the help that's necessary for his mental sanity.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you have to have some way to evaluate complaints that are coming in. So you do your evaluation, and then you do your investigation. And an investigation is slightly different than a criminal investigation. In fact, you know, some of the differences are with a criminal investigation, we follow certain evidentiary standards. We want probable cause to make the arrest, and then we want to have enough facts that will prove beyond a reasonable doubt, the second standard, and therefore convict the individual of the criminal charges. Mm-hmm. But in the United States, discipline in an administrative case is a preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not. And so investigators that do internal affairs have to train themselves that they don't have to get that confession. They don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the actions took place. They only have to meet the evidentiary standard of preponderance of the evidence. At the same time,
even in the case of some kind of criminal?
No, criminal's a whole other matter. I'm talking administrative internal affairs.
Sorry, yes, okay.
Criminal matters are investigated as criminal offenses, and just like you would for any criminal, whether they're a police officer or John Q. Public.
Right.
If they commit a crime, then you would investigate it the same way.
Okay.
But this investigation of police officers, you often have unions with collective bargaining agreements that can put certain restrictions on the investigation. There are 19 jurisdictions in the United States that have what is known as a police officer bill of rights, which gives police officers within those jurisdictions certain rights when they're being investigated. We have a case called Garrity, which means that that you can be forced to answer questions, but the answers that you give once you've been garrotterized cannot be used against you in a court of criminal law. So there's all types of laws that apply and court cases and procedures that apply to a investigation of a police officer for an administrative violation. Mm-hmm. And so your investigators have to be trained on how to conduct those investigations. And then finally, you have disposition. And the disposition is, what are you going to do with that officer once you have met a preponderance of the evidence for that administrative violation? And it could be anywhere from a letter of reprimand to withdrawal of appointment or termination. Mm-hmm. And so almost all internal affairs processes have these four sections. Mm-hmm. Depending on the jurisdiction within the United States, some are mandated by law or by due process, and some don't have any.
Okay. Well... no comment.
I was teaching I was teaching an internal affairs course in Vidalia, Louisiana, and an attendee at that course, when I was talking about policies and procedures, raises his hand and says, what if you don't have any policies or procedures? And I looked at him kind of like he had two heads, and I said, you mean you don't have a use of force policy? And he shook his head no. And I says, well, do you have a sick time policy? And he shook his head no. And I said, you have no policies whatsoever. And he said, none. And I asked him what he, how he knew what to do. And he looked at me and said, whatever the sheriff tells me to do.
So this is the internal affairs guy? This is the guy who's in charge of internal affairs, or just...
A small police agency looking to train somebody to do internal affairs, who was sent to University of North Florida's IPTM school on police internal affairs. And during that 40-hour of instruction, we came to realize that that agency had perhaps some bigger problems than just training someone on how to do an internal affairs.
Isn't that something? I thought that was something that's mandated by federal and state laws that you have to have internal affairs.
Once again, I mentioned that.
Yeah.
Law enforcement's very fragmented in the United States. You have federal law enforcement, 84 federal law enforcement agencies. You have multiple state law enforcement agencies for each state. Then you have county sheriffs and the sheriff's departments for every sheriff. Example, 67 counties in Florida, of which 65 have sheriffs, and they're political animals. They are elected every 4 years and have a lot of political clout. Mm-hmm. And then many cities and towns have police departments. And then we even go further. We put police departments in airports and on bridges and on turnpikes that may have their own governmental entity that establishes a police department. Like the three airports around Washington, D.C. have their own police department.
Right. I mean, in spite of this fragmentation, and in spite of the fact that, from the sound, I just thought that it was automatic that all law enforcement agencies had to have a internal affairs division or department. But in spite of that, though, things are okay in the United States as far as internal affairs are concerned. Is that
really?
I guess it's not. Okay.
No, maybe in comparison to other areas in the world, we look good, and in fact we do. But to be honest with you, there was I won't say that all agencies do a good job in internal affairs. You have the Justice Department, up until this current administration, was actively involving itself in a number of big city police departments, saying that they routinely violated its constituents' constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And so they would sue these police departments and enter into what is known as a consent decree or a court order decree. Mm-hmm. And almost every single one of those consent decrees faulted the agency's internal affair process and not holding its officers accountable. Mm-hmm. And in those consent decrees made major steps in revamping the internal affairs processes.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the exception that proves the rule, right? Because there was something there in place at the federal level anyways to make sure that the problems were rectified, right?
The Justice Department,
yeah.
It really depends on the Justice Department, because with the new administration that came in Washington and the appointment of Jeff Sessions, the Justice Department has pretty much said it's not our job to be inserting ourselves into local law enforcement. Mm-hmm. They were going to sign a consent decree or were in negotiations with the City of Chicago Police Department. And as soon as the administration change came, that came to a grinding halt. So really kind of depends on which way the political winds are blowing in Washington, D.C.
All right, fair enough. Okay, well, how do you recruit for internal affairs?
Well, I always like to say you pick the best of the best. And, you know, you talk to, first of all, I want to get it across that internal affairs is not like what you see on TV. You know, we have been trained in the United States watching shows like SUV and NYPD Blue and you know, all these TV dramatic shows that the Internal Affairs Squad is universally despised. They're the rat squad. They're not to be trusted. And I have taught all over the United States for the last 19 years. I have taught small police departments, and I have taught major police departments like Miami and Tacoma and you know, Hillsborough. And the bottom line is that by and large, Internal Affairs is staffed by experienced, well-respected officers. And when you look at it from a chief or a sheriff's point of view, you don't want to put incompetence in Internal Affairs, because if you do, who pays the ultimate price? A sheriff will become unelected and a chief will get fired. Mm-hmm. So you want to put the best of the best in Internal Affairs. That way they will cover your butt when the investigations are taking place. Mm-hmm. They will do a competent job in those investigations, and therefore ensuring that a sheriff does not get unelected and a chief does not get fired. And what's more is the people respect competency. Brothers and sister officers, if you pick the best of the best, they know that that person will be fair and thorough in their investigations.
Mm-hmm. And do they ordinarily begin as regular police officers and then get special training to be Internal Affairs? Or is there a chance that somebody could be hired directly into Internal Affairs?
Well, let's see. The answer in the United States, almost all Internal Affairs investigators have come up through the ranks. They are experienced, I would say the vast majority of them are experienced criminal investigators. Occasionally, you will hire an Internal Affairs investigator from outside the agency that has unique experience. I have done that, but the bottom line is the person came in with 35 years of experience already under his belt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he certainly had the experience when I hired him. But the bottom line is they generally do come up through the ranks. Mm-hmm. And they have proven themselves. I would say that most Internal Affairs investigators hold a rank of, I won't say most, I would say generally 30 to 40% of them hold a rank of sergeant or above when they're appointed to those units.
You know, the reason I asked that question was because I don't know if you ever saw that film, A Few Good Men. I know this is coming out of the armed forces of the United States, but the main character is a civilian lawyer who's recruited into the Judge Advocate General's office, and he essentially serves as Internal Affairs. But that's something that's separate from law enforcement. That's that's an armed forces thing.
Yeah, A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson was an entirely different ball game.
Okay, is it in any way kind of realistic?
No. Oh, as far as the movie goes, I have no idea.
Oh, okay, all right.
I can't answer that in any way.
Law enforcement, no. Okay, here's another question. Once you're Internal Affairs, can you ever go back to say, homicide, or are you kind of in there for the remainder of your professional career?
No, actually, Internal Affairs in the United States is kind of a stepping stone for promotion. Most chiefs or sheriffs want individuals that they see as the superstars of their agency to spend a tour or a stint in Internal Affairs. That generally lasts anywhere from a year to 3 years, depending on an agency. Very few agencies that I'm aware of put someone in Internal Affairs and then leave them there for their entire career. Now, I would imagine a incredibly large agency like maybe NYPD has a career track in Internal Affairs because, you know, you're policing 40,000 police officers or 35,000 police officers, but the vast majority of agencies in the United States, internal affairs is a temporary position, and you will go back to either investigations or patrol or a specialty unit once you're out of internal affairs.
So you can even go back to something like patrol. It's not necessarily... you said a few moments ago that it was a stepping stone to a much more important position within law enforcement, or a more important position within law enforcement. But it's possible to go back to, I mean, you're a detective.
You're a detective in
internal affairs, and then, you know, your 2 years are up, and then you go back to being a detective in homicide.
Not only common, it is the norm. What I have found is, and you know, I'm sure someone will disagree with me, but I think it's fairly accurate, is let's say you're an agency of 500 officers, total sworn.
Right.
And 500 officers total sworn will probably have somewhere in the vicinity of 50 lieutenants, maybe 35 lieutenants, mm-hmm. In the entire agency. And you're a sergeant assigned to internal affairs, and you are one of 120 sergeants, or 100 sergeants, mm-hmm. and you take the lieutenant's test, mm-hmm. and you get a passing grade, and the chief or the sheriff looks at the 80 sergeants that have passed the lieutenant's exam, and he looks down that list. What name is he going to recognize? He's going to recognize the internal affairs sergeant, because that internal affairs sergeant has had face-to-face contact and has contributed to the chief or the sheriff, mm-hmm. Over his tenure in internal affairs. He's going to know. He'll be a known quantity. He'll know exactly what that sergeant is capable of. And that's why it's known as a stepping stone to promotion, because a chief or a sheriff will have had, well, quite frankly, almost intimate knowledge with that sergeant and his abilities.
Well, how do you make sure then that they don't become too buddy-buddy with the rest of the rank and file? You know, if they're having barbecues together and they're going out on Saturday night to see a film together, you know, how do you make sure that... there is this, I guess it's a myth, right? This myth that they don't like... regular rank and file don't like people in internal affairs. Don't you need to have some kind of distance from the regular law enforcement force of an area or of a county or whatever it is?
Well, I think they don't work with them. All right, the fact is as a general rule, police socialize with police. That's not something that is unique to the United States. You know, they police officers, a whole different ball of wax, but police officers tend to become socially isolated, and don't have a circle of friends outside of law enforcement, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. And so they are, and remember now, these IA investigators came up through the ranks. Mm-hmm. They're not going to cease being friends or acquaintances with people that they were hired with, trained with, and served with. But they're, by the very nature of their job, they're set aside, kind of outside the norm of the day-to-day duties of detectives and patrol officers. In addition, if it is a unionized entity, most unions exclude the internal affairs investigators position from the collective bargaining unit. Mm-hmm. So let's say they're in the collective bargaining unit, they're made an IA, well, they are no longer covered by the union. They're excluded by the union while they serve. So that's kind of like a demarcation line. And then when they're no longer serving in that capacity, they come back into the union.
Okay, well, why would they be removed from the union while they're internal affairs?
Well, the answer is that an internal affairs investigator directly represents the chief or the sheriff. Under their auspices. So when you're being asked, you could be a captain and being investigated by a sergeant who is an internal affairs investigator. In reality, that's that sergeant sitting across the table asking questions represents the chief or the sheriff.
Right. What happens when you're investigating the chief or the sheriff?
Usually, an IA agency, when you're looking at the top individual within an agency, will ask for an outside agency to come in and investigate the top individual within the agency.
You mentioned the unions, and that's I guess that's the other part of internal affairs, I think, which is that in a way, internal affairs serves as a way to protect law enforcement from, let's say, false accusations or.
Of course it does.
Yeah. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Same way it protects a citizen from false accusations. They have to do a thorough, fair job in their investigation. And more importantly, the agency has to hold those accountable that did violate policy or procedure. Not holding someone accountable is an ineffective internal affairs and professional standards process. But yeah, I mean, I've had many, and I do mean many, complaints against police officers that are unwarranted, bogus, made up, pure falsehoods. There is a mechanism, by the way, in most states to deal with that on a criminal level, and that is many states have filing a false complaint with a police department is a criminal offense. So you now, is that a common prosecution? No. Do you see many people being charged with it? No. But it's on the books. And if I'll give you a quick example of it. We had a person come in and allege that a traffic stop, the police officer was incredibly rude for him and asked him for a bribe, which was so out of character for this officer, and we said, okay. We took the complaint, and fortunately, all our traffic units have dash cams. And so we pulled the dash cam in right away and played it, and not only did the officer act in a professional manner through the whole thing, it appeared as though the driver was the one that was almost trying to solicit a bribe. That didn't quite cross the line.
Yeah.
And was incredibly rude. And so now we could have taken a sworn statement from that driver, got him in his falsehood, and then charged him with what we call perjury, which is a false statement in a relevant false statement in a judicial proceeding, an official proceeding, which is in Florida is against the law. And we could have gone that way, but instead we simply showed him the video and he walked out with his tail between his legs, apologizing profusely when we showed him the statute of filing a false complaint with a police officer.
Well, that's the thing. You got to have video or some kind of, you know, documented evidence, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you can use witnesses. I mean, you know, just because you don't have video doesn't mean that you can't prove the alternative. I mean, it just takes good, thorough, basic police work to do your investigation.
I wasn't going to ask you this question, but I think I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyways. So what's your take on what's been happening with all the shootings with African-Americans? Do you not want to answer that? It's
no,
fine.
I don't really have an answer. There are just as many shootings of white people as there are African Americans. There are, I wish I could tell you. I don't know. I can say this definitively that in my 38 years, I got out of law enforcement in 2014. That year and the last 2 years, I think have been a low point in my professional career as to the reputation of police. Yeah. Now, I'll be the first one to say that liking and disliking police seems to run in a cyclical manner. Sometimes it's high, and right after 9/11 it was high, and then it got kind of low, and then it got up high. But is there a rhyme or reason to it? Do I think that police officers actively target young African American males to shoot? No, I don't. Mm-hmm. Okay, I truly don't. Have there been some egregious shootings in the last 3 years? Oh, yeah. And I can't defend those. And nor were they defended. The officers that perpetrated these were investigated and held accountable and either fired or tried criminally. But I don't, you know, I don't want to get into this Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter.
It kind of relates to the whole internal affairs issue, because internal affairs units have come under fire for maybe not doing their jobs as well as they should be doing it in these circumstances.
They've actually come under fire for not doing their jobs as quick as the press and the public would like you to do it.
Fair enough.
I am a firm believer, okay, that you don't give an opinion on a shooting until all the facts are in, until you do your investigation, okay? Mm-hmm. I did see, and this is over the course of the Obama administration, I did see administration officials, particularly in the Justice Department, jump on bandwagons with the public and the press before all the facts were in, mm-hmm. all right? Michael Brown shooting is a perfect case. You know, everyone was abhorred by it. And then when the truth comes out, it was a justifiable shooting.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but my only caveat when you have a police shooting is the press and the public clamor for instant answers. They want the thing wrapped up like TV in a half-hour show, an hour show. They want the person hung, tried, hung, and taken care of within that 55 minutes of show. But the bottom line is an investigation, it takes days. And to comment on an investigation or to involve yourself, especially if you're the prosecutor or the Justice Department, before all the facts are in, I truly think it does not serve justice.
It's inappropriate.
I think so, but
you know, this is going to be of particular relevance to Mexicans. Chicago, Atlantic City, New York, maybe even New York City as well. Turn of the century, very very corrupt law enforcement officials. How was that cleaned up, especially in the case of, you know, again, based on movies, right, Dan? You know, how was it cleaned up in Chicago, Atlantic City? Did it have a lot to do with internal affairs, or was it because somebody external came in, the FBI, and cleaned up the whole thing?
Well, I think you're making a major assumption, and I told you that there's many agencies in the United States that have not been cleaned up, and you know that those things are taking place. I think you need several things to clean up an agency. You need the publics and the powers to be, the governmental, the heads of the government, to commit to, we must make law enforcement a priority. And make law enforcement as ethical and above board and transparent as possible, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to have that commitment from the heads of the government and the public. Then you've got to go out, and we talked about this in Mexico City when I was there, mm-hmm. you have to recruit the best of the best. You cannot recruit people without high school diplomas or lack of education or of questionable ethics. You have to go out and do a background that is thorough and complete, and make sure that you get people that are solid gold. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to pay them. You know, and part of the problem in Mexico with your cartels is, you know, a police officer can make a year's salary in one night's turning a blind eye. And that's problematic, and so you have to pay a living wage, a reasonable living wage, to elevate the position to one of a professional or quasi-professional in status. Then you got to train them. And when I say train them, I mean that can't be the first thing to cut in a budget when fiscal times get tough. You have to train these people how to maintain their integrity, how to do investigations, how to not violate people's constitutional rights when you make an arrest. I mean, just train. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing is you got to hold bad apples accountable. If you've got someone in your agency that shouldn't be a police officer, get rid of them.
So internal affairs is really only one element of a properly functioning law enforcement system.
Oh, it's just one cog in the wheel.
If there's one thing we have to do in this country, what do you think it is?
Ooh.
Something relatively easy.
Something relatively easy.
Because I keep on thinking that internal affairs is something that's relatively easy to do.
Well, no. First of all, I've met many of your internal affairs investigators, and I admire them. They're ethical and they're top notch, and that says a lot given the fact of what they're trying to do there. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I am not in a position to tell you how to solve the problem in Mexico.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem that you're going to solve in a generation. It may take two or three generations to do it. I'm not sure you will ever totally resolve it, because human nature being human nature, there will be people that will become unethical or are unethical and are going to violate the law or other people's rights. But with that said, I think what you really need to do is increase the standard of your entry-level police officers. I think you need to go out there and literally recruit college graduates and pay them a living wage where you want to do that. And just increase the quality of officers that are coming in to the pipe. Mm-hmm. And that's the same here in the United States. We have to go out and, you know, we have a saying in the computer world that you have garbage in, garbage out when mm-hmm. we talk about data entry. Well, it's so true in law enforcement and personnel, too, here in the United States as well as around the country. If you hire bad apples, then the agency is going to fail. If you hire good apples, it can still fail, mm-hmm. okay? But at least you give yourself a chance of turning it around.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. I feel like I've just been schooled on the issue of law enforcement and internal affairs, and deservedly so. I hope you have a great weekend. And
same to you. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, be safe.
You too. Have a good afternoon. Won't you?